Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. Tracy Crouch has resigned from the government. She said it was about an argument over whether a certain sort of betting terminal should be banned. But was it more than that? And what does this tell us about the stability of the government? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles. So, James, it's a bit unclear why she resigned. The argument was about the so-called fixed odds betting terminals. She had thought she'd done a deal to reduce the stake from £100 to £2. Why should this lead to her resigning?
Because she feels that the government is delaying bringing in this measure. And she thinks, as she put in her resignation letter, that this will lead to more people losing money on them and more people committing suicide because of the debt that they rack up on these machines. Now, number 10 say, no, we haven't changed the date. What are you talking about? Now, the explanation here is there was an understanding that was never kind of formally written down of when this would happen. And in the budget, it slipped back to October. And I think that...
From when?
From March or April. So it's a kind of six-month-ish delay.
And she has quit over a six-month delay? It sounds a bit fishy.
Because I think she feels that these machines that, you know, their critics call the kind of crack cocaine of gambling have such a negative effect on people and communities that any delay is wrong. And I think the problem the government got themselves into is that their argument for this delay essentially is, well, we need the tax revenue. And for a government that has talked with this high moral purpose about burning injustice and stuff like that, to basically say, we can't make this change yet because we need the tax revenue from this human misery, is not exactly the most compelling argument.
Now, if that is what Philip Hammond told you, mind you, I wouldn't put it past Philip Hammond.
Jeremy Wright, the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, basically said that in the House of Commons yesterday morning. He basically said, well, we need the money for public services that these provide, and the Treasury want this other new tax that they're bringing in on gambling to kick in at the same time. So they're getting the same amount of tax revenue from gambling as before. It's just the types of gambling that they're getting it from is changing.
Though you've since seen a spin from some government figures saying it's not actually about money, it's the fact that they need to give the industry time to adjust, and it would be too difficult for all these gambling companies way to do it, you know, around the March-April time, because they wouldn't be able to plan for it.
But Casey, we had sort of rather bizarre drama where we didn't know if Tracy Crouch was in the country yesterday when her boss was at the dispatch box. People were asking him, where is she? Meanwhile, it seems she's having a conversation with the whip. So are we to believe that she basically said, look, I've tried to fight you on this, I've lost the argument, so this is where the story ends, this is goodbye?
Well, we had lots of friends of Tracy Crouch basically talking to various journalists about the fact that she was planning to hand in her resignation, or had planned in her resignation, was waiting to be accepted. And it did seem that initially what she was trying to achieve was to say, you need to change this, otherwise I will actually resign. I think that soon became clear that the government had no plans to actually move on this issue. And then there's obviously been such a briefing at that point, it's very hard to stay in post when you basically have said that you're going to resign if this doesn't happen. So I think that's how we got to where we are. I think it's a difficult one for the government because Tracy Crouch is seen as being quite a reasonable politician. She's very well liked, and she's also seen as one of those Tory MPs who probably you would align to a type of burning injustices agenda. She she does worry about things like social mobility, and I think the fact that she has gone over this issue will create some unease on the Tory backbenchers.
So James, do you think she would have said something more broad to the government? I mean, it's because it seems to me, as with most disputes, there normally is, you know, there's a proximate cause and there's a deeper concern. Breaking up is never easy, but did she have to go?
I don't think she did have to go, and I think the government missed a way out, which is... I think that yesterday the Treasury could have talked about the timings. You know, I don't think they had to commit definitively. I think one of the problems in inter-Whitehall terms is that in this budget, an awful lot was dictated to the Treasury. They were basically told to give the NHS this massive amount of money. Then Theresa May, weeks before the budget, says austerity is over. And I think there was therefore on the part of the Treasury, there was huge institutional reluctance to start unravelling the budget because a junior minister objected to something in it. So I think
It's not as if they hadn't, if the casino industry were to lose these fixed odd betting terminals, they'd hardly be like walking through an empty house of tears in their eyes, would they? I mean, it would not be the end? Would it even be noticeable to the public finances?
No. So this is when you when we get into this thing, which is, don't forget Philip Davis, who is the big defender of the gambling industry on Tory backbenches. His argument is that if you bring this ban in too quickly, small independent bookmakers who rely on them for their money, you know, the big bookies would be fine, but small independent bookmakers would struggle. Now, I think that is what Tracy Crouch is alluding to in her resignation letter when she talks about people with registered interests have won the day. Now, I think this is an amazing political cock-up in a way, because you've got this budget which is massively expansionary, which has more money for the NHS and tax cuts in it, and you've ended up losing a minister and ending up with a very negative series of front pages on a charge that kind of reinforces one of the Tories' weaknesses, which is this sense that they know the price of everything and the value of nothing, over a very small amount of money.
Katie, this is a common theme of the May government, isn't it? Look at the Windrush saga, the loan charge fiasco that Ian Dale reveals in the magazine this week. It's got bean counters who were looking at the price of things but missing the wider politics of this. So I'm wondering if Tracy Crouch thought, look, this is a kind of, you know, to use Steve Hilton's language, a less human government, and that she's waiting for another one.
I don't think there was in any way a coordination here, but what I would say is there is this growing feeling amongst the Tory backbenchers and those who are ministers that this is a government of the past. And when you speak to them, I was speaking to an MP yesterday, he was saying, you notice with certain Secretary of States, they in a way have a certain urgency right now to get things done because they don't think they're going to be in their position for that much longer. And I do feel like we're getting to the point, perhaps if Theresa May makes it that far, you know, after Brexit, for a changing of the guard. So I think Tracy Crouch is genuinely very upset about what's happened here, so has taken that opportunity. But I don't think that I think she's one of several politicians who don't feel like the current regime fully represents their politics anyway, so it's a bit easier to walk away from than if it was an agenda you were fully behind. And I think you can notice that. And then obviously we're hearing now that David Cameron is thinking about allegedly making a return, and I think, again, I mean, that's been greeted with comedy, but it is a sign too that everyone does see the Conservative Party as being in such a state of flux that it's not the set. We don't really expect Theresa May to be leading the way in, you know, a couple of years' time. I think as for David Cameron allegedly wanting to become Foreign Secretary.
Yeah, in the same way that he made William Hague Foreign Secretary. He likes the ideas of former leaders becoming grandees at a relatively young age.
Exactly. So I don't think he'd have to do the constituency work. It just goes straight to, you know, touring. you can't rule anything out because you just don't know who's going to get in place. But I do think, actually, one of the things that does unite a lot of MPs is a growing annoyance, actually, at David Cameron and his hand in all this. There's, I think, if you speak to some people on the Brexit side and some on the Remain side, I do think that, like, David Cameron's legacy at the moment is getting worse. Not better.
And James, we read in The Sun today that the reason David Cameron wants to come back is because he's bored to tears. In fact, it's put rather more crudely than that. But not many other people in politics are bored to tears right now for reasons that are kind of related to those behind David Cameron's departure. I'm trying to work out if he can be forgiven. William Hague was forgiven. Tony Blair probably could never be. Do you think, can you see an era where David Cameron is welcomed back to the government? Or do you think it's just the way that if you've been Prime Minister for a while, if you leave under the circumstances he did, then he'd be better to pursue a political career in some other country?
I was talking to someone very close to David Cameron this morning, and they were making the argument that, you know, that look, you know, he wants to come back. He doesn't want to come back tomorrow, but, you know, maybe in a decade's time, you know, not under the next leader, but the next leader but one, you know, he could emerge as a kind of elder statesman figure. He still has all these contacts around the world and all this. I think there is another problem here, though, which is, you know, David Cameron is only 52, right? When you have been used to being Prime Minister and the power that comes with that and the sense of purpose that gives you, you know, you retire, you leave your job, you leave the House of Commons. You know, at first it's great. You get to pick the kids up from school, you play lots of tennis, life seems a lot easier, you catch up on all that sleep that you missed out on. But then after a while, there is this big hole in your life. And I don't think Cameron is motivated by money in the way that some former politicians are. You know, either because I think he's A, got a genteel sufficiency already, or more than a genteel sufficiency. And secondly, I don't, you know, some people in life like to use money to keep the score. David Cameron isn't one of those people. So I think he is just sitting around not quite knowing what to do. And I think this is, you know, I think he would love some big job. But the problem is that because of Brexit, lots of global jobs, like, for example, being Secretary General of NATO or something like that, you know, they're not really going to be right for him for that reason. And so there is this kind of sitting around. I think what is also noticeable, which is not just Cameron, but the Cameroons as a whole are becoming much more engaged in Tory politics again, partly for the reasons that Katie was saying, that they can see a leadership contest coming and a change of Tory direction coming. And they want to have a kind of influence on that. They want to kind of steer the party back more to the direction that they were taking it in than the direction that Theresa May has taken it in.
Well, I think that, as James just said, there is definitely a growing feeling that actually this debate for the future of the Conservative Party is reopened. And when Theresa May first came to power, I think there are actually a lot of Cameroons, perhaps people such as, you know, Cameron or someone who are probably wondering of hindsight whether it was such a good idea to leave the Commons so quickly. It did seem at the time like Theresa May would be there for a very long run. She had very high popularity, enjoying a ridiculous poll ratings for her honeymoon period, and it looked like she would increase her majority to perhaps even triple figures. So at that point, you can see why all these people thought, well, she doesn't like our agenda and she now has control. I better find something else to do. But now you have figures such as David Cameron and George Osborne, who didn't want to be constituency MPs when there was little hope, who are outside of Parliament. And I do think that they have to somehow think how they can get back into that debate. It's going to be a bit harder because of the decisions they made, but it can't be denied that these people are still fairly young by politician standards, and they do think their ideas are very valid still, whether or not people agree with them. And you saw that a bit this week when George Osborne went on Newsnight put through his pitch and tried to defend his record. I think if you really weren't interested in politics anymore, you probably wouldn't feel the need to do that.
Yeah. And James, can you ever see it happening, though? Because there's a lot of MPs who have stuck with it through all the... Look at the guys who did New Labour. They were the people who stayed with the party through the depth of the 1983 despair. They fought. They were in the wilderness. They had it really tough and they reinvented their party. Now, you could say that even David Cameron, he joined Parliament in 2001 at the doldrums. But to actually do a runner now and then come knocking back on the door of Parliament, that's just not how our system works.
I think the second greatest misjudgment of recent political times of 2017, Theresa May obviously in calling the snap election, George Osborne in standing down. Because if he had just stayed in Parliament then, Theresa May would have felt, in that position of weakness, she would have felt obliged to come to him with an offer of a job. And he either could have chosen to be one of the people organising trouble for her on the back benches and the face of the internal Tory opposition to her, or he could have walked back into the cabinet and taken a seat at the table again. It was a mistake. I mean, there's also a broader problem, which is not good for our politics. When all these people quit, we are denuded of experience in the House of Commons. You know, when you look at the problem right now, you know, in these massive Brexit debates, it would be really useful to have some of these people with their experience, you know, able to stand up and say, well, what about this? What about that? And I think this is a problem. I do think, though, that George Osborne, even more than David Cameron, you know, is someone who would like to come back. And I think if you look at the interest that George Osborne takes in a future Tory leadership contest, not in running himself, but in who is running, who the field are. You know, he takes an even keener interest than you would expect the editor of a national newspaper or editor of the Evening Standard to take. I think that is in part because a little bit of his brain is thinking, who will make me Lord Osborne and give me and make me a senior cabinet minister again? I think that is definitely, I think this will be an issue. And I bet you in the hustings, the next Tory leadership contest, there will be questions from their opponent, from the opponents of the Cameroons, you know, asking people to rule out giving them jobs.
Perhaps Prime Minister Tracy Crouch will look kindly on George Osborne. We'll see. James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes store, and you can also rate and review us. We love to read the reviews, so if you're even half-minded to leave a review, go to the iTunes store and try. We'd love to read it. No, we-